Oh, okay, so I guess we should get started. Good morning. So today, we'll get into the nitty-gritty of how to solve linear systems. First, I'll show you how the idea of solving them, which is not going to involve matrices directly, but when we actually make the calculation more efficiently, matrices are going to play a key role. And so, let's see. I'll get this going here. Good. All right. So I'll start with reviewing linear systems and what their solution sets look like. Then I'll show you how you can actually solve equations, not by eliminating variables and substituting into subsequent equations, but rather, instead of focusing on variables, we'll focus on the entire set of equations, and we'll systematically manipulate the equations until we get the equations of the solution. And so that's sort of new, so I'll spend some time doing that. And then in the third step, what we'll do is we'll transport our basic calculation into a matrix setting where we can do it even quicker. All right, so let's start. An n by n linear system, that means n equations and m unknowns. And linear means that the variables are occurring at worst to the first power, if they occur at all, but they're always occurring in separate terms. You never have an x1 times x2 in the same term. And what we found, I guess, on Monday and also last week, was that their solution sets are always going to be a hyperplane. These hyperplanes are generalizations of single points, lines, two-dimensional planes, or higher geometrical objects. Basically, they're a copy of a little vector space sitting inside of a larger vector space. So, yeah, points are just single points. When we have one direction to depart from that point, we get a line. When we have two, we get a plane, etc. So, what I'm stressing this from the start, because in the end, when we solve linear systems, our goal is going to be to express a solution like that. Okay, so what we've seen is that if you have n equations and m unknowns, then the possible solutions are either no solutions at all, in which case we would say the solution set is empty, or we always get a hyperplane, some solution set that has exactly this form. It just we'll have to figure out what the p0 is and what these vectors v1 through vm are. Okay, and then we also know the dimensions, well, at least an estimate of the dimension of the solution. Generally speaking, every time you add an equation, you reduce the number of free variables by one. So if you start off with no equations and so m free variables, and you impose a series of equations, what you should get is n and m minus n dimensional solution space. You can understand this just from your high school technique. Every new equation gives you another variable you can eliminate. So if you start off with m variables and you have n equations, then you can effectively eliminate n variables and you're left with m minus n free variables in your solution. However, sometimes you can add an equation in that doesn't really add any new restrictions on your variables. And so it's not always the number of equations. If I said m minus the number of independent equations, then this would be a strict equality. However, we can't always know if our equations are dependent or not. So we have to be prepared that our solution set actually might be larger than we might expect. All right, and then I'll end up proving this theorem that when you solve a linear system, you always get a solution set like this. This is going to come out from our technique of solution. We'll show you how you solve it, and then I'll show you how you write the solution in that form. Okay, so in high school, and probably hitherto at this point in your mathematical career, is that you solve equations by focusing on one variable, using an equation to eliminate it, substituting the result in the subsequent equations, and then eliminate more variables. But that gets really complicated because it's okay for two equations, but if you had 10 equations, so you solve for x1 in the first equation. Now you have to substitute x1 into 9 other equations. And so then you can eliminate x2. But then you have 8 other equations to put that into. It becomes a mess and it's very error prone. So the technique we're going to pursue is we're not going to worry about variables per se. Rather, what we're going to do is we're going to manipulate the entire sets of equations rather than the variables until we sort of massage the equations until they're actually the equation of the solution. That seems sort of far-fetched, but I'll show you how easy that is. All right, so the first thing I need to explain is how can I modify equations without changing their solution? And these operations should be familiar to you. If I have two equations and two unknowns, and then I can manipulate these equations, and one frequently does. For example, you can change the order of the equations. That's not going to change the solution. It's just changing what you regard as the first equation and the second equation. So I'll denote that like this. It seems like a sort of a trivial operation, but I'll still take time to tell you what I'm doing to a set of equations. If I'm simply changing their order, that just means flipping them. All right, so that should be easily understood as not changing the solution. Another thing you can do to an equation is you can, if you see equation has a common factor on both sides, common thing to do when solving equations is to simplify the equation by pulling out common factors that appear on both sides. That doesn't change the solution either. All right, and so I'll denote that by saying an equation goes to a certain number times that equation. In this case, I multiply the second equation by 1/2 to get that equation. But notice what I'm doing is in these operations, I think of it as acting on the set of vectors, even though the exact operation only acts on one of them at a time. All right, and then finally, what you can do is you can replace an equation with in general, you can add it to another equation and use that new equation as a replacement. But more generally, what you can do is you can replace an equation by its multiple. Let me just do the easy method first, demonstrate that. So let me work with these two equations. X plus y is equal to 2, and x minus y is equal to 2. Oh, yeah. So if I add these two equations, x plus x is going to equal 2x, y plus minus y is going to equal 0, and 2 plus 2 is going to equal 4. This equation is implied by these equations, and in fact, I can replace either one of these two equations with this equation And I'll get exactly the same thing, because if I can add these guys to get this equation, I can take any two and subtract them to get back this guy. So another operation that will not change the solution set is to replace an equation by its sum with another equation, or even a multiple of another equation, because in this step you see that you can also replace equations by their by a multiple of an equation. All right, so we'll write that is, for example, here, if I'm going to I'll replace the second equation by its sum with 2 times the first equation. Let me do that slowly. Maybe here. I guess it will show up best here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take equation 2, 2x minus 2y, and then let me figure out what equation 2 minus or plus 2 times equation 1 is. Well, that's going to be 2x minus 2y. Sorry, I'm running out of ink here. 2x minus 2y. Oops. All right. 2x minus y equals 4. And then 2 times the first equation is going to be 2x plus 2y equals 2 times 2 is 4. And so what I can do is if I add these two equations together, I'll get 4x. These will cancel, equals 8. And so that's how you would actually, I didn't add correctly. Well, on the slide, I guess this should have been 8 there. So it's a slight typo there. But you see how that operation is working. And in fact, you shouldn't have to be writing these things down on the blackboard. Ideally, what you can do is sort of in your head, add 2 times this equation to this equation. So I'd have 2x plus 2x is equal to 4x. 2y minus 2y is equal to 0. And 4 plus 4 is equal to 8. You should just be able to read it off the equations, what the result of this operation is. Okay, so just those three basic operations are going to be sufficient for me to convert a set of equations into their solution. But let me introduce the notation I'll use. So when I write this, I have this double arrow between the two equation labels. That means I'm going to just switch their order. And if I write it this way, this means that the ith equation is getting replaced by a multiple of itself. And this last operation is going to be we replace an equation by its sum with a multiple of another equation. Those are the three operations I'm going to allow myself. And now I'll show you by an example that I can use those operations to solve a system of equations. So here's the original set. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add the two equations. And I'm going to use that sum to replace the second equation. So you add, and then you use that the result to replace one of the equations that you started off with. So what I'm doing is I'm going to replace the second equation by its sum of its first, and the result is you add these two equations, you get x plus x is equal to 2x, y minus y is equal to 0, and 1 plus 3 is equal to 4. All right. Well, here we have a common factor on both sides, so I'll simplify that system by dividing the second equation by 2. That converts it to that. And now what I'll do is I'll take the first equation, x plus y is equal to 1, and I'll subtract from it the second equation, x is equal to 2. Is that what I want to do? Yeah, x minus x is going to produce 0. Oops, I didn't do this correctly, did I? It looks like what I should have had is equation 1 Oh, well, let's see what I got. I'm replacing equation 1 and I'm subtracting equation 2 from it. So x minus x should have been equal to 0. 1 minus y would equal y. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I did do it correctly. X plus y minus x is simply y. And then 1 minus 2 is minus 1. So I did do that correctly. What threw me off is I'm operating on the first equation. So I'm replacing the first equation by this difference of equations. All right, so here I got two equations. All do now is flip them to get the variables in their canonical order. And you have the solution of the original system. The only way you can solve this equation is by setting x is equal to 2 and y is equal to minus 1. All right, so that's basically the idea. The idea is to not work with variables, but rather entire sets of equations and systematically manipulate them until you reach the equations of the solution. Once we get the equations of solution, then there's still more work to be done. We have to express that solution as a hyperplane, but we've basically solved the system at this point. What would remain is how to express it in a tidy form. Okay, so that's what's going to be going on in the background, but the calculation that one uses sort of doesn't rely on looking at equations at all. Rather, what we do is we introduce matrices into the game so that these manipulations of the equations can be performed really rapidly. In fact, the first thing we're going to do is just throw away all the variables and work with the matrices that contain the coefficients of the equation and the numbers that appear on the right-hand side. So let me remind you what the coefficient matrix is, the matrix of variables, and the numbers B on the right-hand side, so-called inhomogeneous terms. Here's a system of n equations in m unknowns. We grab all the coefficients on the left-hand side, put them in an n by m matrix if we started off with n equations in m unknowns. Then we put the m variables in a column vector, and we put the numbers that appear on the right-hand side in a column vector. And the point of this thus far has been to now realize that this entire linear system is encapsulated by this single matrix equation, where to understand the connection between these two is you have to perform the matrix multiplication. You have to multiply these two factors together, and then you compare the result component by component. What you'll find is when you multiply these matrices together, you'll get a column matrix that whose first entry is going to coincide with the first entry here, second entry is going to coincide there. However, even though this idea of matrices is important, and in fact we'll use equations like this later on, our initial technique for solving linear systems is not going to rely on solving this matrix equation directly. Yet we'll still use matrices as follows. What we're going to do is grab from this matrix equation, we're going to create a new matrix, so-called augmented matrix, wherein we take the coefficient matrix for coming from our equation, we take the inhomogeneous terms, and we just append those inhomogeneous terms as the last column of a larger matrix. So here you see, if I ignore this guy here, that's just the original coefficient matrix. What I'm adding on to it in a separate column that I'm going to separate by a line, because the left-hand side plays a different role than the right-hand side. But we separate them, but we write this down this way, and that will be known as the augmented matrix corresponding to a given linear system. All right, so let me show you how this is done. Here's a system of three equations and three unknowns, and here's its augmented matrix. Really easy, right? You go coefficient of x1 in the first equation is going to give you that first coefficient. 2 there is going there, minus one is going there, two is going there. There's the first row of that augmented matrix. So effectively, you get it by erasing the plus signs in the variables, putting a line for the equality, and just enclosing the whole thing in square brackets. And not only can we go from equations to augmented matrix, it's simple to go from an augmented matrix back to equations, right? I know what equations this first row corresponds to. Think of these augmented matrices. The variables are not appearing explicitly, but this first column always corresponds to the coefficient of x1. The second column always corresponds to the second coefficient of x2. And the third column always contains the coefficient to x3. So what's happening here is, although I'm no longer writing down the variables, if we need to recover them, we can get them from the augmented matrix. Okay, so here's the plan and how we're going to solve linear systems. Oops, let me make sure this appears on screen. The first step will be, as I've done in the last slide, I'll take a linear system and I'll express it as an augmented matrix. And this should be a two-way arrow because I can go both ways. The next step will be, instead of manipulating the equations until we get the solution, the idea is going to be take this augmented matrix and manipulate it until we get the augmented matrix of the solution. Then we'll take that augmented matrix of the solution and we'll see what the corresponding equations are. And that will furnish us with the equations of the solution. And finally, the last step will be to take the equations of the solution and reformulate that as a set of vectors that actually is a hyperplane. All right, now, there's lots and lots to explain with this algorithm, even though it's pretty simple. First of all, I'm going to manipulate a matrix to another matrix. How am I going to recognize what the matrix, augmented matrix of the solution is? Well, I need to explain that. There'll be a target that we shoot for as we perform operations here. So one of the first things I'm going to explain is, what does the augmented matrix of the solution look like so we know which direction we want our operations to lead us? And second of all, that's a key step. And of course, the other part of that in step two is, okay, I'm going to perform a sequence of operations to simplify my augmented matrix. What operations do I use at what time? We have three different choices. In fact, we'll have more than three choices. We can interchange various pairs of rows. We can replace rows by sums with multiples in other equations. It's not clear that if you just start doing that randomly, you're not going to go around in circles. So what's going to be developed primarily is a systematic procedure to take a given augmented matrix and do a sequence of well-defined operations where at each step you know what to do next, and it will lead you to a particular form of an augmented matrix that we'll know is actually the augmented matrix of the solution. This is the hard part, step two. Once we get those augmented matrix of the solution, it's easy to convert back to equations. And then writing the equations as a hyperplane, that's also pretty easy as well. So it's actually step two I'm going to spend the most time on. I should also point out that in the discussion last week, I talked about how when you solve equations, you can have, every equation corresponds to a hyperplane, and the solution sets can be understood as intersections of hyperplanes. And so there are instances when you think about solution sets as being hyperplanes where they're parallel, and so there's no solution. There's instances where they intersect, and there's instances when they coincide. What I'm going to do as I develop this step two is I'll point out how you identify when each of those phenomena is happening, okay? And And that will help you better understand the nature of the solution, even before you reach the solution. Okay, so here's the point. I've hopefully convinced you that there are three operations, three families of operations that you can perform on a set of equations that's not going to change the solution set. What I'm going to describe now is, well, I can take a set of equations and manipulate them and get an equivalent set. Or I can take a set of equations and convert it to equivalent equations. On the other hand, these guys correspond to augmented matrices. And so do these guys. But what I'm going to try to avoid to make the calculations proceed is not to figure out what the augmented matrix according to this change is, rather than take an equation, manipulate it, get a new equation to get a new augmented matrix. I want to see directly what an operation up here does to the answer here. But it's really, really simple. I'll show you in the next slide how you transcribe operations on equations to operations on these augmented matrices. All right, so first of all, if you interchange the equations, you just reverse the order. But then when you write down the augmented matrix, your equations are occurring in different order. The coefficients in one equation are going to rows of the augmented matrix. So interchanging equations is just going to have the effect of switching the corresponding rows in the augmented matrix. If I replace an equation, or if I multiply an equation by a number, then each coefficient and the number on the right-hand side of the equation is also going to be multiplied by lambda. When I convert to augmented matrix, that means every element in the row corresponding to that particular equation is going to be multiplied by lambda. So in fact, if you think of this as a concatenation of row vectors, when I multiply one of those equations by lambda, one of the rows of this augmented matrix is going to be scalar multiplied by lambda, because every entry in a given row is going to be multiplied by the same number. And then the last basic operation where we replace an equation by its sum with a multiple of another equation. If I take an equation I and I replace it by its sum with a multiple of another equation, what that's going to correspond to, well, the ith equation corresponds to the ith row of the augmented matrix. And then it's going to be replaced by its sum, the sum of the ith row of the augmented matrix, with lambda times the jth row of the augmented matrix. All right, so all I'm saying here is to implement this operation on equations on the augmented matrix, we look at the corresponding row, this would be row I, and then we replace that row, well, by a similar operation. This is going to be exactly that. The row corresponding to this side is exactly that. Okay, so what I've got now are three operations that I can perform directly on the augmented matrices. And in fact, I'll denote them this way. This corresponded to interchanging two equations, but now I'm interchanging two rows of the augmented matrix. This corresponded to multiplying an equation by a constant number. And then I can just do a scalar multiplication of the corresponding row. And in this operation, I'm taking it corresponds to replacing an equation, the ith equation, by its sum with a multiple of the jth equation. But on the augmented matrix, that's implemented via this vector sum, right? This is just a linear combination of the two row vectors that are sitting inside the augmented matrix. All right, so now let me show you by demonstrating these operations in action, how we can use it to solve a linear system. Okay, so here's x plus y is equal to 3, x minus y is equal to 1. First step, we'll convert it to an augmented matrix. All right, so this is nicer. Notice the variables have disappeared, and all I'm going to be doing subsequently is manipulating this matrix. So the first thing I'll do is, let's see, I'm going to replace the second row with its difference with the first row. And so we can do this in place. So the first row, 1, 1, 3, is not changing because the operation is only acting on the second row. And what's going to happen to the second row? Well, I'm to subtract the first row from it. Let's do this in place. 1 minus 1 is 0. Negative 1 minus 1 is negative 2. 1 minus 3 is negative 2. So you notice I didn't have to carry any variables around, and the step, which would be more tedious if I actually was working with the equations, is done really rapidly. All right, so now we ended up with this matrix. Let's manipulate it. Here we have a common factor of 2 on both sides. So what I'll do is I'll replace the second row by its multiple by minus 1/2. That will convert this minus 2 to a 1. And similarly here. And now we have a new equation, our new augmented matrix. The last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to take that first row, and I'm going to subtract the second row from it. Then I'll get 1 minus 0 is 1. 1 minus 1 is 0. 3 minus 1 is 2. All right, now, I'm stopping here, but my claim is that this is actually the augmented matrix of the solution. What you might observe here is that the identity matrix is sitting here. That's a good clue that, we'll see as soon as I write down the equations, why I regard this as the equation of the augmented matrix of the solution. Because when I take that matrix, that augmented matrix, and I convert back to equations, I'll get 1 times x1 is equal to 2, or simply x, or sorry, 1 times x is plus 0 times y is equal to 2, or simply x is equal to 2. And here we have 0 times x. Let me remind you that when you go back to equations, you think of the columns as representing variables. And so I get 1 times x1 plus 0 times y is equal to 2. And I have 0 times x, 1 times y is equal to 1. And now, there you see your solution. Okay, now, in this case, I'm not going to, I could write down that solution as a hyperplane, but it's so simple anyway. There's only one value of x and one value of y will permit me to solve the original set of equations. And so my solution set is a hyperplane, but it's sort of a trivial one. It's just a single point that corresponds to something with coordinates x. X has to equal 2, and y has to equal 1. So there I actually finished the entire program for this linear system. I've solved it, and I've expressed that solution as a hyperplane. But that hyperplane is the trivial one. It's just a single point. Okay, so let me pause here. Any questions so far? Yeah.
I have two questions. So is our goal to get to an identity matrix?
Ideally. So what the identity matrix it tells you is, in fact, you have a unique solution. But remember, we don't always get solutions, and so not always going to get the identity matrix. The next thing I'm going to do in today's lecture is actually tell you what that augmented matrix of the solution must look like. And in fact, there'll be a unique form that will have a clear goal to head towards, and it will have an algorithm that will lead us to that eventually. And so that's what's coming up. But yeah, I wanted to point this out because here it's sort of easy to read that, oh, okay, so this row is saying that x1 has to equal 2. There's no contribution from the other variable. And this row is telling me that the second variable has to equal 1. So I want you to see that even at this stage because it will be helpful later on. But it is not true that you always get the identity matrix here. You'll get something even more general than the identity matrix so that we can include the possibility that we have three variables in our solution rather than a unique solution as in this case. Okay, so let's what's left to explain it now is, well, as we row reduce, as we use elementary row operations to change an augmented matrix into the augmented matrix of the solution, the order and choice of those operations, I need to explain how you decide what to do next as you systematically reduce an augmented matrix to the augmented matrix of the solution. And then, so that we don't just go around in circles, we'll have to know, have to be able to recognize when we've reached the augmented matrix of the solution. So I'm going to concentrate on the second answer, second question first. What is the solution, the augmented matrix of the solution? What should that look like? And then once we know that, it'll be much easier to understand how we get there. We know the destination, then we can call up Google Maps and find how to get there. All right, so some nomenclature. This nomenclature, not overly technical, but it allows us to talk, use a familiar terms for a calculation that we'll be doing over and over again. So the first idea to bring out is if you have a matrix, not necessarily an augmented matrix, we have a notion of pivot. And what a pivot is, it's the first non-zero entry in a row when you read from right to left. All right, so here I have a matrix with three rows. Each row, so long as it has a non-zero entry, is going to have a pivot. The way you identify it is you read from right to left, and so here's a zero. That can't be a pivot. It has to be a non-zero entry. Here's the two. It's the first one I come across, so I underline it and identify that as a pivot. In the second equation, I have a non-zero entry in that first column, so that's my pivot there. In the third equation, I have two zeros, so those cannot be pivots, but here's the first possibility. And in fact, it's exactly the first possibility that we identify as the pivot. All right, so that's easy. All I want you to do when I say what are the pivots in a row, just to figure out what the reading from left to right, what the first non-zero entry is. What I'm trying to describe to you, of course, is what the augmented matrix of the solution looks like. Figuring out where the pivots live is a key part of that. All right, so here's another definition, row echelon form. What this is going to mean is that the pivots, these first non-zero entries, we want to have them arranged in a particular fashion inside our augmented matrix. We want them to be sort of concentrated up to the upper left-hand side. More precisely, what we want is the pivots in the rows above are always off to the left of the pivots in the rows below. So this equation is not in row echelon form because here's the pivot here, and in this row below it, its pivot is off to the left of the row above it, and so it doesn't satisfy this condition. If you have a pivot in an upper row, to be in row echelon form, if this guy was the pivot, that would have worked. The pivot is off to the right of the pivot in the row above. But here, the pivot is moving left ways in the left direction as we descend. And so this is not in row echelon form. What we're trying to do is get our pivots to sort of form a staircase inside the matrix. You want to maybe a pivot up here. And then later a pivot there, and a pivot there, and a pivot there. So you want to have this sort of downward staircase As you move off to the right, your pivot should be descending. So if you descend through the matrix, your pivot should be steadily moving off to the right. What you don't want is to descend off to the right, descend off to the right, descend off to the right, descend off to the left. This sort of phenomenon you're trying to avoid. All right, so let's give some examples here. Here's a matrix in row echelon form. I've underlined the pivots, and you see that as I move down the matrix, the pivots are steadily moving off to the right. Here's a matrix that's not in row echelon form because this pivot in the first row, well, the pivot in the second row is occurring off to the left of the pivot in the row above it. So that's not row echelon form. Okay, so simple enough to identify. And in fact, being able to recognize, and even better, being able to work towards matrices in row echelon form is going to be the key operation we use to convert a given augmented matrix into the augmented matrix of the solution. But there's a refinement on this. If I have a matrix already in row echelon form, so its pivots are occurring downwards and off to the right, then we can put an even stronger condition. We'll demand that a matrix, we'll say the matrix is in reduced row echelon form. If it, first of all, is in row echelon form, that the pivots all equal one, and that above and below the pivots, we have only zeros. So let me give you maybe three examples here of what we're talking about. Here, 1, 2, 1, or maybe like 0, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 1. Here's a random matrix. The pivots are here, here, and here, and they don't really fall into any particular pattern. Then we have a row echelon form. To be that, you might have something like 2, 2, 1, 0, 3, 2, 0, 0, 1. All right, so here are the pivots. I scan across rows and I'm underlining the first non-zero term. All right, so but this matrix is at least in row echelon form. And now a matrix in reduced row echelon form could look like this. 1, 0, 1. 0, 0, 2, 0, 0, 0. All right, so 0, 0, 1, I guess I have to put, and maybe 0 there. I can put a 2 here, and it will still be in reduced row echelon form. All right, let me check, let me verify that that matrix satisfies all three of these conditions. Here are the pivots. First row, it's the first entry, and the second row is the last entry, and the third row doesn't contain any pivots at all. So, but it is in row echelon form because the pivots are occurring in that downward staircase formation. So it's in row echelon form. It's the pivots, I've underlined them, they're both equal to one. And so there we have the second condition satisfied. And lastly, notice that not only below the pivots I have zeros, but for a reduced row echelon form matrix, even above the pivots I have zeros. Here's why we like matrices in reduced row echelon form. Look at the identity matrix. 1, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 1. I've already sort of hinted that identity matrices, we've got to correspond to the augmented matrix. When you see the identity matrix sitting in the coefficient side, it's going to mean you're looking at the augmented matrix of the solution, corresponding solutions, and in fact, you have a unique solution. Well, it's also a matrix in reduced row echelon form. Here are the pivots that are occurring downward in a downward staircase off to the lower right. The pivots are all equal to one, and above and below pivots, we have nothing but zeros. These guys This is the form of an augmented matrix of the solution. It generalizes that first example where we came up with an augmented matrix, and then I wrote down the equations and you could see it was the solution. But more generally, we might get an augmented matrix of a solution that has this form. And actually what's going to be very important here is that this form, I can stare at it right now, and I know that I have a one-dimensional solution set. You don't see that yet, but that's to be explained. That the one-dimensional nature of the solution set for an equation like this, you look at the columns that don't contain pivots, and that every column that doesn't contain a pivot is going to mean you have a free variable in your solution. That's coming. But for right now, I just want you to understand that this is our target. As we take a set of equations, we convert it to an augmented matrix, we start doing row operations. This is the kind of matrix we're trying to reach. And then when we reach a matrix in reduced row echelon form, an augmented matrix in reduced row echelon form, that we can immediately convert back to equations, and that will be the equations of the solution. Okay. So now we know where we're going. Next step is to explain how to get there. Okay, so let me give you some more examples of matrices in reduced row echelon form. Here, notice the pivots. Sorry, it's not clear on the blackboard. Move it down a little bit here. I've underlined the pivots to help you see them, but they're readily identified. The first non-zero entry in any given row, they're occurring in the downward staircase. They're all equal to one, and above and below pivots. Above them. Oops, this is not quite. This is not in reduced row echelon form yet. It would be if that were zeros. I actually state that it's almost in row echelon form. But if I replace those entries above this last pivot by zeros, then I would get a matrix in reduced row echelon form. But of course, if I was trying to solve a system of equations, I couldn't say, oh, this is not yet in row echelon form, I'll just put zeros there. No, then you're actually changing the set of equations that correspond to the augmented matrix. What you want to do, if you want to get rid of these entries here, is you're going to have to get those zeros there by doing some sort of elementary row operation, because those are the operations that don't change the solution set. So it's not simply taking an equation and erasing stuff so that you get the right answer. That only works in chem labs. Rather, what you're going to do is you're going to somehow get from this matrix to a matrix in reduced row echelon form by using elementary row operations. All right. So I think we got the program established. Now let's see how we can implement it. All right, so let's see. Here's a matrix in reduced row echelon form. And of course, when you actually have the identity matrix on the left-hand side here, you can read the solution directly off this augmented matrix. X1 times 1. So remember, we'll do this explicitly for a little while further. First column corresponds to the first variable. Second column corresponds to the second variable. Third to the third variable. You would convert back to equations by going 1 times x1 plus 0 times x2 or plus 0 times x3 is equal to 2, or simply x1 is equal to 2. 0 times x1, 1 times x2 plus 0 times x3 is equal to 1, or simply x2 is equal to 1, etc. All right, so here's an example of a matrix in reduced row echelon form in which it's really easy to see that this is the appropriate augmented matrix for the unique solution of some linear system. All right, but here's a matrix that's not quite in reduced row echelon form, but it's in row echelon form. But it's not in reducial echelon form because, first of all, the pivots are not all equal to one. But here's a matrix that's not in even in row echelon form because this entry here, as I just go down a row, the pivot in the row below it has moved off to the left rather than the right. And here is a matrix that's in row echelon form, but it's not in reducial echelon form because the pivots are not all equal to one. Let's see. I'm just giving more examples of this. Oh, I'm sorry. Pardon me. If I do run over this time, it's because I'm thinking about what I'm going to say next rather than the time. Just raise your hand and say, professors, I got a class or something like that. Okay, so I'll let you guys go, and we'll do examples of this on Friday, and you'll actually see how you systematically reduce a matrix to its reducible echelon form. Yeah.
I guess this doesn't really matter. Whenever we're talking about this matrix, and the solution comes out to be this.
Yeah.
Is this just simply a line and another line colliding with each other?
Yeah, and so they have a single point intersecting. Okay. So we'll interpret our solution geometrically. The first goal is just to get them.
Yeah. And so how would you represent a plane? I guess would it have to have a third variable to be a plane?
Yeah, you would, because you want you need a second free variable in your solution.
Okay.
So yeah, so you may have any number of variables originally, but just think about solving equations like you do in high school. And after you've eliminated all as many variables as you can, you're going to have a certain number left over. That's going to be the dimension of your solution set. Ah, but these are linear equations, and so that never happens.
When's the first exam?
Pardon?
When's the first exam?
If you look at the syllabus, I sort of outline the course, and it's going to occur after we discuss inverses of matrices.
Okay.
But what I do is I don't set a date from the start because it varies from section to section, year to year, exactly. Is it the eighth meeting or the ninth meeting of the course?
How much lead time will you give us?
I'll give you at least a week. And in fact, what I'll do is I'll pull the class and let them pick the exact date.
Okay.
I don't have a math question. I just wanted to say, I noticed the guitars in the background in your home office.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a guitar player, and I was nerding out about all the ones you have that I wish I had.
Well, several of those I built myself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's not that hard. Basically, what you do is you buy the wood pre-cut because it's all done on CNC now anyway.
Yeah.
And so you just buy the wood pre-cut, you glue the thing together, and you lacquer it up.
Right.
But you put your own hardware on. I do my own fret jobs and things like that. It takes part of the mystique out of Gibsons and Fenders when you see how easy they are to build.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But
that's awesome.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you mind giving an example of like unsolvable system of equations? Like, what would that look like?
Oh.
Yeah.
X plus y is equal to 2.
Yeah.
2x plus 2y is equal to 5. Right? Because okay, so divide this equation by 2,
right,
and you get x plus y is equal to what? 5/2. But they can't be both equal 2 and 5/2.
I see. And that's when you have two planes
that never intersect. And then when you have like three equations, they can have individual intersections, but they don't have a common intersection.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah.